So we can say this is the invocation to Sage Patanjali, who gave us three kind of disciplines of life. Most important three disciplines: body, speech, and mind, right? Body, speech, and mind are the three most important aspects of our life. And he gave us the science to help us with all these three. Ayurveda, Sanskrit grammar for speech, Ayurveda for physical body, and then yoga for the mind. So those are the three things that he gave us. So we are always very grateful to this great personality by the name Patanjali.
So how do you define Ayurveda?
Ayurveda is the medical science.
Oh, okay.
It's the medical science from ancient India.
Okay.
Okay.
That's what I thought, but it wasn't quite making sense to me in that context.
Yeah, no, but he gave us, yeah.
Okay.
He was one of the
developers.
He was the most celebrated. Again, he did commentaries.
Okay.
Like grammar also, he was the most respected commentator on Panini's grammar. Okay. So his commentary is still considered to be the best, the most exhaustive, most authoritative, authentic, and all that. Same thing with Ayurveda.
Right, that would write down the traditions, I guess.
Hmm?
He would write down the traditions more so than
anybody else.
Them.
Yes, yeah, yeah. So he gave the commentary on the Ayurvedic text.
Okay.
And then commentary on the grammar, but then he was the original author of Yoga Sutras. Great to have you all. So for those who are coming here for the first time, you know, just a very brief kind of introduction to what we're doing here. This is the study of the philosophy of yoga. Well, let's not call it just philosophy. It's the philosophy, psychology, I would like to add methodology of yoga, you know, which has been given to us by Patanjali. And this is the most authoritative text, so to say, on the concepts of yoga. And anybody who wants to learn yoga has to kind of follow this text to understand the underlying concepts of yoga. Okay, so that's what you know, I try to do whenever I have time. And then whatever I learn, whether it's the right information, wrong information, or misguided information, I share it with you all here. And most of the time, it's the latter. But, I try my best. Okay. These are, the concepts given in the Yoga Sutras are not easy to understand. A couple of reasons. One is that the sutras have been written in a very cryptic, almost like a coded format. Okay. They're very, very hard to decodify. They had to be very, very brief and cryptic because of the very nature of the information in those days, because there was no printing press, there was nothing to write on, nothing. So every piece of information was transmitted orally. If you write a long text, nobody would remember that, memorize it. So they were written in a very brief manner, crisp manner, so that you could memorize them and then pass down in an oral tradition. That's exactly how the whole thing was done. Okay. But then it made it very hard to understand because of the very cryptic nature. So you had to rely on a commentator. Okay, otherwise you would not understand what. So a commentator who probably has a much deeper understanding of what the original author had in mind. That's what we needed. Okay, so in that sense, we always go back and look at some commentaries. That's why. And then every commentator gives a different approach. Okay, so when we read the commentaries, we are always confused, Is this guy right? Is this guy right? Is this guy right? And then we have to put our own 2 cents in the whole thing and then try to make sense out of it. Okay? So that's how we try to understand what's going on here. All right, let me just get your names. Give me your address. So, again, very, very briefly and quickly, this text has 4 chapters, okay? The first chapter called the Samadhipada has a basic understanding of the very basic concepts of yoga, very definition of yoga, what the objectives of yoga are, and how to kind of basically attain the objective of yoga, which is to attain the state of Samadhi. Okay, that's what the first chapter is all about. Second chapter goes into an understanding of the term klesha. Klesha is suffering. Klesha is affliction, pain that we all go through in life. What causes that? And, you know, how to get rid of that. So the second chapter goes into much more depth of this whole concept of rebirth, karma, karma theory, reincarnation, and also the underlying philosophy of Sankhya. Okay, so in that sense, second chapter for me is the hardest to understand. Where I'm really struggling to still make sense of all the stuff that's going on in there. Okay? And that's where we are now in our studies here in this class. We are in the second chapter now. Okay, so that's what we will be focusing on. And then the third chapter is all about the deep states of meditation, which can lead you to attaining supernormal powers. So when you are in very deep states of meditation on different items, you can attain powers which are beyond normal human behavior. Okay, so those are all given in the third chapter. And the final chapter, called the Kaivalya Pada, it goes into a little more depth of what that final state of the mind is when you attain the full, you know, kind of, you go through all these steps and understand yourself truly, what your true nature is, how does it, you know, how do you get there, etc. You know, what does it mean to be there? So that's all in the final chapter. Okay, so that's roughly a very...
So are you going to cover all four chapters?
We are going to cover only up to the middle of chapter 3, or the first one-third of chapter 3. So first chapter, second chapter, and the one-third of chapter 3. That's what we have been covering in the past. Okay, and we'll stay with that. Unless there is an interest, we can try.
Okay.
Try to go a little deeper. Okay. So let's get an introduction to our new friends. Tell us your name, first name, last name, and what kind of work you do, and why did you decide to waste your afternoon here? I asked everybody.
My name is Jaya Jagannathan, and I've attended your yoga before.
I don't recall. I'm sorry.
Not like a... You know, at HSNC, the class.
Oh, HSNC. Okay. That's where I...
Yeah.
Okay.
When I moved here about four years ago, I started. And then life happens, and I'm not able to do it anymore. But I always get your emails and always wanted to, come to your classes, trainings.
Mm-hmm.
And today it just happened to be like, I don't want...
Nice, bright,
anything
sunny.
Else, I just
nice, bright, sunny day. Why not?
Yes.
Okay.
And this is my mother. I said it'll be a very good discussion, or to learn something new. We've always heard about it, so I said, why don't you come?
Wonderful, excellent. Thank you. Welcome. Okay. All right, so very, very briefly, we're going to review. Last time, I believe, my notes said we went up to Sutra number 9. Does anybody remember?
Yeah.
9, right? Yeah, okay. So, the very first sutra in this chapter was the definition of something called Kriya Yoga. Okay, so that was the very first one, which is the combination of three activities, tapas, swadhyaya, and ishvara, pranidhana. Those are the three things that constitute this whole concept of Kriya Yoga. Kriya Yoga means the yoga of action, activity. And those three are also a part of the five niyamas, which we will be covering later on. Okay, so five niyamas, they have the same three elements of tapas, swadhyaya, ishvara, pranidhana. Tapaha, or tapas, mean... Tapasya. People from India know what tapasya is, right? That's tapaha. Tapasya means to go through some well-determined hardship for yourself, which will toughen you up mentally, physically, emotionally, so that you can withstand all the dualities of life that you are confronted with everywhere. You know, this tapaha, or these measured form of toughening things that you can do. Okay? So that's tapaha. Swadhyaya means you have to study yourself. You understand yourself by studying the scriptures. When he says scriptures, these imply the ancient texts which are supposed to contain the ultimate truth in life. Okay? So texts like the Vedas, Upanishads, Gita, Yoga Sutra, you know, these are the texts which are written by very, very well-renowned sages, rishis. And then Vedas are supposed to be non-human created. Okay, they are supposed to be Shrutis, which means they are not created by the humans. So, you know, they don't have human intellect involved. So they contain the truth. Okay. So those are the things that you study through Swadhyaya and then become knowledgeable about yourself. Then Ishvara Pranidhana is the third of these three activities. Ishvara is the God or the Lord, Supreme Consciousness, okay, the Supreme Being. And Pranidhana means to surrender yourself. That means you recognize the greatness of this Supreme Being and then completely let go of your own ego. You know, you have not, you, then you can, all you say is, I'm nothing, you know, and you are everything, and I want to learn everything from you. I want your blessings, your, you know, everything that way. You got the idea? So that's the Ishvara Pranidhana. So that's the first sutra. It says these three combined together, when we do this, it becomes Kriya Yoga. And so the purpose of Kriya Yoga is twofold, it says, okay? So what it says, this sutra says there are two objectives that are met by the practice of this Kriya Yoga. One is to develop Samadhi Bhavana. Samadhi Bhavana, that's the first one. Samadhi is the state of being where your mind is completely absorbed in yourself, basically. It's a very deep state of meditation. It's called Samadhi. So you develop that bhavana, that attitude of samadhi through this Kriya Yoga. So you're coming very close to the final state of being. Okay, so samadhi bhavana is the first thing. And then the second thing that happens as a result of this Kriya Yoga is klesha tanukarana. That's the numbers, the second statement is klesha tanukarana. Klesha means, and he's going to define kleshas later, it means all the suffering, all the pain, all the troubles that we go through, stress these days, you know. Very common word is stress. So, tanu karana means, tanu means diminish. Tanu means narrow, diminish, you know. When a woman is named tanu, that means her waist is very narrow. Okay, that's the meaning of the word tanu. Okay? Tanu means diminish something, make it small. Alright? So, through the practice of Kriya Yoga, it says, you are able to diminish your kleshas, your sufferings, your stresses and strains. That's the meaning of this sutra. Everyone with me so far? All right. Okay. Now then he lists these five kleshas here. What are the five kleshas, or what are the five causes of suffering? First one is avidya. Okay, avidya is ignorance. Ignorance, that's the ultimate cause. That's the mother of all causes, it says. Mother of all causes is avidya, ignorance. Not knowing who I am, what my true identity is, etc., etc. What avidya does, when we have avidya, when we have ignorance, it creates ego. That's called asmita. So the next one is asmita. Ego. You know, then ego takes over. Hey, who the hell are you? I am supreme. We'll take care of everything else, you know. I know the most. That's ego. That's asmita. When we have asmita, then we develop all these raga and dvesha. That's the next two. Raga is strong likes for something, and dvesha is strong dislikes. We always have likes and dislikes, right? Always. That's caused by ego. And when we have strong likes and dislikes, the fifth element comes in, which is called abhinivesha. Abhinivesha is the fear of death. Abhinivesha is the desire to cling to this life. I don't want to give it up. That's the Abhinivesha. So, five can call them causes of suffering. Avidya, Asmita, Raga, Dvesha, and Abhinivesha. Those are the five listed here, which means these are the five which cause all kinds of human suffering. Okay, or mental stuff. All right. And then the next one is, so now he is talking about, you know, the fact that avidya, like I mentioned, he says avidya is the mother of all the other afflictions. It's the root cause, basically. Being ignorant is the root cause of everything else that develops as a reason for our suffering. Okay? So he says, Kshetram Uttaresham. That means it's the field for the growth of all the others. That's what it says here. Avidya Kshetram Uttaresham. But then those others, those other four, they can be in one of these four states. That's what he defines here. They can be in a dormant state, which is very deep and subtle, very deep in your subconsciousness. Okay? That's called the dormant state. It's called prasupta. Then they can be a little bit subdued, but not quite as deep. It's called tanu. Okay, again, sushupta or supta, tanu, and then vichinna. They can be scattered. Vichinna means scattered. They can be active one time and go back into the consciousness again. Active consciousness again. Okay, that's vichinna. And then udara. Udara means active at this point. You know, I'm angry at somebody. It's very active at this point. That's udara. Udara means I'm right there now. All right, and so you're acting very angrily at somebody, and then suddenly some peaceful thought comes in the mind. Hey, forget it. Let's worry about it next time. Okay. Then it goes into the subconscious level. Okay. Then it becomes, you know, vichinna, etc., etc. And then sometimes, you know, there are things which are way deep in our subconscious levels, never to be felt. But then suddenly some trigger can bring it up. Who knows? So those are the four kind of states or stages of these other four kleshas. Because avidya is the mother of all them. So that's active all the time. It's always active. You are always ignorant. no doubt about that. But the other four, they can be in any one of these four states. So that's the next one. Okay. So this is now the very definition of avidya. Okay. And again, we're not going to go into depth here, but again, very quickly, thinking or understanding something that is impermanent as permanent. Most common example is this body, right? Human body is impermanent, but we think this is permanent, this is going to stay with us all through, and we take care of it, this and that, you know, nothing. Okay, so anitya means which is impermanent, which is considering that as permanent, then what is impure as pure, again this body, right? The example they give is, look at everything that comes out of this body. Doesn't matter. Anything that comes out of the body is ugly, it's smelly, it's absolutely useless, right? Anything that comes out of this body. And yet we treat this body as very pure. Okay? I mean, these are just simple examples, but everything in life that we do represents that. Okay? So, ashuchi. Then, anything that's painful, sometimes we consider that as very pleasant. Painful as pleasant. Food is a very quick example, right? We think food is very pleasant to eat, you know. But next day, who knows? Can cause all kind of pain, suffering, diarrhea, indigestion, constipation, who knows what happens, right? And eventually mental pain and other ailments, right? So we don't know what gives pain, what doesn't give pain. So that's the other thing. And then finally, the non-self as self. Again, the same thing, this whole material being as the non-self, We think that this is the ultimate reality, the ultimate truth in life. So we just don't know what reality is. That's the basic concept here of avidya. Okay, so that's this concept of avidya. Okay. Now what is asmita? Asmita is the ego, like we said. And you know, this goes into the concept of the whole Sankhya philosophy, and we have talked about it a few times here in this class, but the second chapter, the whole chapter, you know, when we go into the depth of this, it's going to go into much more depth of the Sankhya philosophy. But the basic idea here is that the ego is our inability to understand what our true nature is, all right? And then because of that, even though, you know, if you study the whole concept of yoga, it tells you that my true identity is my pure self. It's called the Purusha or my Atma or the soul. That's my true self, okay? My Atma, that's my true nature. That's who I am. But I don't know that reality. And that's why I try to superimpose myself on this physical body, mind, intellect and all that. When that happens, ego wakes up. Ego takes over. So superimposing the reality of the Atma or the soul onto the ego, that's onto this mind-body complex, that wakes up the ego. And that's what asmita is called. That's asmita. And that happens again because of, I don't know, my true reality. That's the concept of asmita, all right? Okay. What's the next one? Next one is? Can you read that? Raga. The word, Sanskrit word is raga. Raga means?
Attachment,
likes, very strong likes. So again, you know, based on our experience, if we have an experience which is very pleasant, we get attached to it, right? Anything, same food. Food is my favorite example, right? You have a piece of cake for the first time, you love it, then you get attached to it, and you want the next time also, right? Whether it's good or bad, that's different, right? So that's attachment. And then you create a strong like for it, and that's what you want. That's raga. So any experience that is pleasant will develop that raga or strong like for something. And then the next one is dvesha, which is the total opposite of it. Okay, so unpleasant experience will cause dvesha. Right? You talk to somebody and this guy feels like a wretched fellow, and then, you know, he gives a hard time, and then you develop a total dislike for that person. That's dvesha. Almost like animosity. Almost a very strong negative feelings about something or somebody or some entity. That's called dvesha. Okay? Based on an unpleasant experience. Okay? All that is caused by ego, remember. All that is caused by the ego. Okay. Now, abhinivesha is the fear of death. Now, this sutra says that fear of death is so strong in us that even the most wisest of people, okay, Vidusha is the word used here. Vidusha means somebody who is extremely wise, who is extremely elevated in the level of consciousness. That means they have even studied yoga for a long time, they have meditated for a long time, and they have realized their kind of, or their true self in some sense, and they are very wise, and even they are afraid of death. That's what this sutra says. Okay? So, everyone is afraid of death. They want to maintain what I call status quo. That's the most comfortable, right? Status quo. I'm happy, fat, dumb, and happy. Why do I want to change here? You know, I don't want any change. I'm comfortable. Not realizing that change is what brings more growth. Without change, there's no growth. Okay, so that's how far we went last time, okay? All right, so this is where we start from our session today. Now, like I said, we are getting into a part of this chapter which to me is very, very complicated, okay? So what I'm going to share with you, like I said, is my understanding. Like, whether it's right, wrong, or misguided, stay with it. All right? So let's go through the sutra first. So repeat after me. This, we always do this. We repeat word by word the Sanskrit phrase first, then we go through the meaning word by word, and then we'll see how it flows. Okay? So, te pratiprasavaheyaha sukshmaha. Te pratiprasava heyaha sukshmaha. So that's the sutra in Sanskrit. So te here means they. Te means they. Te means they. They means the kleshas. We're referring back to the five kleshas. Now, sukshma means subtle. Sukshma means subtle. Sukshma means something that is way down deep in our subconscious levels. A very subtle form. Now remember, in the very second sutra we saw that when you do this Kriya Yoga practice, tapas, swadhyaya, ishwar, pranidhana, the kleshas become, you know, remember the word tanu was used, diminish the influence of the kleshas. When you diminish their influence, they become deep, very subtle form in the subconscious. They are very deep, okay? The word used was dormant, like sushupta, okay? So those which are very subtle in the form, sukshmaha, they can be eliminated only by pratiprasava. Okay? What is pratiprasava now? It's a very important term to understand. Prasava, anybody know what prasava, Sanskrit? Prasava means birth. Okay? Prasava means birth. Okay? So, birth, let's say the birth comes from the womb, right? In a human body, you know, the womb is where the birth happens, and then the birth happens after that. When you add the prefix prati, it means the reverse of that. Putting something back to the womb. That's prati prasava, going backwards. Okay? Now, this whole creation started from prakriti. You know, now again, you are new here, so I don't know if I should go through that concept one more time. Okay, maybe I should. Otherwise, you will be lost. Okay. So I'm going to take a diversion here. All right. Otherwise, you will not understand this. So, you know, this whole philosophy of yoga that Patanjali has given us, it is based on a more ancient philosophical system called Sankhya. Okay? Sankhya, S-A-M-K-H-Y-A, Sankhya philosophy. And these two are actually a part of the, there are six philosophical streams in our Indian thought. So these are a part of these two are part of those six philosophies, okay? Okay. Anybody remember the names of six? Nyaya, Vaisheshika, Mimamsa, Vedanta. Anyway, I'm not going to go into that. You know, that's a very separate topic, all right? But yoga and Sankhya are very intimately related in the sense that what Patanjali did was to take some of the very essential tenets, essential concepts from Sankhya and built his philosophy on top of that. So it's based on the fundamental concepts which are inherent in the philosophy of Sankhya.
Okay. Is it Samkhya or Sankhya?
depending on where you are from. In South, they will call it Samkhya. In the North, and where I'm from, we call it Sankhya. But the right spelling is always Samkhya. Okay? That's always difference between North and South in India. Okay? All right. So Patanjali took some basic tenets from this philosophy called Sankhya and built kind of on top of those concepts. So what are the very fundamental concepts in Sankhya? It says there are two independent and eternal entities. Two entities which are eternal but independent. But they are related. What are the two entities? The names given in those texts is Purusha and Prakriti. Purusha and Prakriti. In common parlance, Purusha is soul, Atma, self. And Prakriti is everything else, which is not self. Right? So, Purusha being the pure consciousness, pure soul, that's separate. And then Prakriti is this whole complex. My body, my mind, my intellect, this entire material being, this chair, table, you know, trees, all the living beings, non-living beings, etc. Everything that we see around us is all Prakriti. Okay? And those two are real. Alright? This is very different from the other philosophy called Vedanta. Anybody heard of Vedanta? No? Let's not get in that. The reason I bring that up is because in Vedanta there is only one reality, which is called Brahman. Okay? But in yoga and in Sankhya there are two realities, Purusha and Prakriti. And some of the concepts given in these texts, they're not explained very well, but they just mention that, right? For example, this concept of evolution, how did this evolution happen? I mean, it just mentions that this is how it happened. There's no explanation given. And not many people can give an explanation. At least I haven't read many commentaries which give a very precise understanding of what this explanation is. Okay, so this evolution. So what they say is that this Prakriti, in its form, when nothing is manifest, there is no human creation before that, this Prakriti is in a state of balance. Balance of what? So they define things called the three gunas. Anybody heard the term three gunas?
Heard the term, but not what it is.
What are the three gunas? Anybody remember?
Mind?
No, three gunas. Three.
Okay. Rajas.
Go ahead. Rajas, tamas, and sattva. Sattva, rajas, and tamas. Those are the three gunas. Everything in this universe is a composite of these three gunas. Everything. That when I say everything, our human body, our mind, our actions, trees, whatever you see around, feel around, is a composite of these three gunas. What do they represent? Sattva is purity, clarity, calmness, peace, tranquility, good stuff. That's sattva. Rajas is all action, movement, ambition, desire, anxiety. Okay? All that is covered under the word rajas. What is tamas?
Inactivity,
dullness, negativity. Okay, that's all tamas. Negative stuff. Okay. So desire to kill somebody is a combination of tamas and rajas. Okay. Eating food that's been sitting there just because you're lazy, you know, for a long time, it's almost rotten, but you have no desire to go to the store, that's tamas. Okay. So every entity within this framework of Prakriti is a composite of these three gunas. And they are always in a state of turmoil, always. But what they say in the Sankhya philosophy, it says that at the beginning of time, when time t equal was zero, time was t equals zero, this Prakriti was in a state of balance. They don't define what balance is. They say when the sattva, rajas and tamas, they were in perfect balance and there was no movement within the dominance of those three elements. That time, this whole Prakriti is called, it's called Mula Prakriti. Mula means the root, basic. The Mula, root Prakriti. Or the unmanifest Prakriti. That means no manifestation has happened. Now, because of the proximity with Purusha, something happened. Rajas takes over somehow. And there's no explanation why or how that happens. Okay, it just happens.
That's sort of like Adam and Eve, isn't it?
Yeah. Exactly. Who knows what happened?
Yeah, really. I know.
Okay. So, but in the text also, they don't tell you why.
Sure.
You know, they said, Rajas took,
something happened.
You know, but my explanation is, you know, Purusha was getting bored, you know, nothing to do. So he said, let's have some fun. So he said, hey, you know, just wake up, guy. You know, he just kicked his elbow under the armpit of Prakriti and said, wake up, wake up. So what wakes up? Rajas wakes up. Rajas is activity, right? When activity wakes up Rajas, it tries to do something. And that doing something is helped to have fun, to create something. So it created this entire mess that we are in, basically. All right. So again, there are these 23 elements that God created. Okay. Well, I've talked about these 23 elements before. So first element that God created is called buddhi or the intellect. Buddhi, you know, intellect. Then buddhi went and created ego. We need identity in this life, so ego was created. And then ego went ahead and created other things. Things like the mind God created, right? Then the five sense perceptions God created. Sense perceptions mean sense of smell, touch, taste, etc., all that. Okay? And then all the sense organs God created. If you have a sense of smell, you need an organ to do that smell. So nose got created, eyes got created, etc., you know. So all the five sense organs got created. And eventually you needed something to do some action. So five organs of action got created. You need activity, right? So hands and legs, arms and shoulders, everything got created. So five organs of action, right? So they got created. And then finally, to create all this, you needed some basic elements. They are called Pancha Mahabhuta in Sanskrit. Mahabhuta is the five elements. Earth, water, fire, air, and ether. All those God created. Okay? So we have 23 elements that God created when the Purusha gave a nudge to Prakriti and have some fun. Let's have some fun. Okay? So they are having fun. We are having miserable time. All right. So once again, a very quick review of what are the 23 elements? Intellect, ego, mind, five sense perceptions, sense of smell, touch, taste, etc. Five sense organs, eyes, ears, nose, speech, and the tongue, the skin. Five sense organs. That's 13, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Then five organs of action. Legs is one, feet and legs. Hands and arms are one, two. Okay. Third is?
Mouth,
tongue, speech, organ of speech. Fourth is?
Organs of elimination.
Okay, organs of elimination. And fifth is?
Organs of reproduction.
Organs of procreation, reproduction. Okay, so that makes it 18, 15 plus 3, 18. Then five. Earth, water, fire, air, and ether. 23 elements. We always talk about these. 23 elements that got created as a result of this imbalance in the three gunas. That's the starting point. Okay? So that's the whole, you know, the very basic concept of the creation of this whole being, okay? And that's all given in the Sankhya philosophy. And Patanjali has used the same concepts within his framework of the Yoga Sutras. All right? This is called the process of evolution, okay? How the evolution takes place. Now, what is the goal of yoga? Goal of yoga is to go backwards. You know, like I said, having created this mess, we want to get out of this mess. How do you get out of this mess? Go backwards. Okay, from the gross. So this was from subtle to the gross, to the grosser, to the grossest, to ultimately the grossest, which is the five elements. Now we want to go backwards, from the gross to the subtle, to the subtler, to the subtlest. And eventually merge back into the ultimate unmanifest, you know, entity, with the three gunas being perfectly balanced. Okay? That's the whole goal. We go back to this whole creation of the root cause or the source of this creation, the womb, as they say, the womb of creation. That's the goal of yoga. All right. That is this process of when we made this whole thing, it's called evolution in English. When we go back, it's called devolution. English terms, I don't know. That's what they claim, devolution. So we want to go in the direction of devolution and eventually reach that state which is called pratiprasava. Well, this is to explain the term pratiprasava, all this explanation.
So are you supposed to be able to get to that state while you're having a human existence?
Yes. That's the idea. So while you're having the human existence, can we attain that state of perfect balance of the three gunas? Yes. That's the whole purpose. And that Patanjali says that state is called Kaivalya. That's the name of the fourth chapter in yoga. Kaivalya Pada. Kaivalya is the state where you have attained complete balance of the three gunas. So if you read the sutra number, the last sutra in chapter 4, read that sutra. See what it says, chapter 4.
Let's see if I can find it. You put me on the spot here.
Very last sutra.
The supreme state of independence manifests while the gunas reabsorb themselves in the prakriti, having no more purpose to serve the purusha. Or to look from another angle, the power of pure consciousness settles into its own pure nature.
See? So, same thing. That's what we're talking about. The three gunas, they have reabsorbed back into the main mula prakriti. Okay? That's the whole purpose of final statement in Yoga Sutra, very last sutra, chapter 4. That's what it says. We want to reabsorb ourselves back into the mula prakriti. Okay? Prati prasava. Reverse process. So, what it's saying is that those kleshas which have attained a very deep state at the subconscious levels, which are very, very subtle, ultimately, the goal is to, that's the final thing that we want to eradicate. Final thing. So this sutra actually says, what's your final goal? Okay? The final goal is to eradicate all those kleshas, all those samskaras, which are at the very deepest level of our subconscious. And they can be done, that can be done only by attaining the very ultimate state of yoga, which is pratiprasava, which is to merge back into the root cause of everything. Okay? Are these easy to understand? Not at all. Do I understand? Not really. When do you understand this? When you reach the highest state of meditation, basically, right? But at the intellectual level, we can get some idea. So that's what we're trying to do at the intellectual level, not at the experiential level, okay, which is very hard. So that's where I'm kind of dabbling, you know. At the intellectual level, I'm trying my best to understand all these concepts at this time. We'll see how it goes eventually. All right, so that's the... Prasava means birth. Pratiprasava means resolving back to the source, the Moola Prakriti or the unmanifest Prakriti. That's what we talked about. So through Kriya Yoga, we said the kleshas have become very weak and subtle. And when the mind is purified, kleshas remain there. You know, all these samskaras, they will remain there, but they are like burnt seeds. You know, seeds can grow, right? Seeds can fructify. They can grow into a tree only when they are alive. But if you burn the seeds, they might still be there, but nothing will happen. Okay, so that's what the commentator Vyasa says. When you really purify the mind, completely do the final purification, then all the samskaras, all the kleshas, they become like burnt seeds. They are not going to be able to fructify anymore. All right? Okay. So this is the next sutra now. So let's go through the Sanskrit first. Okay, repeat after me. Dhyana. Heyaha tad vrittayaha. So the whole thing is dhyana heyaha tad vrittayaha.
Dhyana heyaha tad vrittayaha.
Tad vrittayaha. Okay. Now what are we talking about? So the previous sutra gave us the final goal. That's the ultimate goal of completely resolving everything back to its original source. Okay, but then there are, you know, he says, there may be other steps, right? So we did Kriya Yoga, which was to diminish all the vrittis, etc. But then there are certain, you know, there are certain things which are always active in the mind, all right? Always active in the mind. So how do you get rid of these things which are always active in the mind? I'm angry, I'm jealous, I'm hatred, I have hatred. These are all active. I have desire, I want to eat something, I want to go to sleep. You know, all these are called vrittis, which are in the mind at this very moment. They're fairly active. They're controlling my behavior, basically, everything. This is how I'm behaving all the time. But then it says, to diminish those, you all have to do is to go into a deep state of meditation, dhyana. Dhyana means meditation. So here it's just not, doesn't mean that you just sit 20 minutes in the morning and do some meditation, you know, om, om, om. That's not what it's going to do. Okay, so you really have to get into a very deep state of meditation to be able to get rid of all these things which are very active in the mind, to be able to control everything that's going on in the mind. Remember the very definition of yoga was in the very first chapter. Everybody remember the definition of yoga? Chapter number 1, sutra number 2. No? Nobody remembers the definition of yoga? Come on, guys. Sanskrit phrase. Read the chapter 1, sutra number 2, please. Loud.
Chapter.
It's so hard to find.
The restraint of the modifications of the mind stuff is yoga.
Yes. Restraint of the stuff that's going on in the mind. Restraint. Control. Sanskrit is chitta vritti nirodha. You must remember that phrase in Sanskrit. Please. Memorize that. Okay? Chitta vritti nirodha. That's what it says, that you know, vritti means those activities that are constantly going on in the mind. All the agitation, all the perturbance going on, all the chatter that's going on in the mind, that's called vritti. So those vrittis, it says, can be diminished, can be eliminated by getting into a very deep state of meditation. Okay. So again, you know, this is all samadhi based, and in the first chapter we talked about these four different stages of samadhi. You know, so again, we have to go back and forth. That's how we can understand all these concepts, which are kind of embedded in each other, right? All right, so we have to go into these deep states of meditation called samadhi to eliminate everything that's bothering us in our mind field.
It seems to me like you could be sitting there for 30 minutes and having a really good meditation session. And then you get up and go do whatever, and it all just flies out of your head.
Absolutely, yeah. That's what's happened. So that's why it's a very continuous, repetitive process where, you know, we do it every single day, twice a day maybe, and then slowly the mind begins to settle down. All these vrittis, all these samskaras that are deep down in the subconscious level, they begin to subside. See, otherwise, you sit down here, do a half-hour meditation, you feel good about it, get up, and all those vrittis come back up again. You know, because they'll just come up again. Oh, let's go. Let's play volleyball. Let's do this, you know. Do that. Let's go shopping. Let's plan out.
You know, I have found that with the meditation, it has helped me control the chatter in my mind after I meditate. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's a big payoff.
It's a big payoff, yeah. Absolutely, yes. Yeah. But that's the goal.
It's not completely gone. But
that's exactly the point. You know, you keep doing it over and over again. Yeah. Keep doing it over and over again when you sit and meditate. Okay. But then, you know, when these yogis, they attain a certain level of spiritual elevation, they see your mind is in meditation all the time, 24 hours of the day. Even when you're shopping, you're in a state of meditation, basically.
Yeah. That would be very cool.
That's cool. Yeah. But that's exactly what they say, right? Constant.
I think I heard this clip in YouTube for Osho, Rajneesh, that he, in one of the interviews, he said that it doesn't matter where I am, he would say that I'm always in a state of meditation.
Exactly, that's what they say.
Yeah. There is no movement.
When the mind is able to operate from a place of total tranquility, that's meditation. When you're not agitated, no matter what happens, you're not agitated and you're able to operate from a level of pure tranquility, calmness, peace, you're in meditation then. I mean, like I say, easier said than done, but
yeah.
that's what we are striving for.
I don't know if it's some, I think it is tranquility, but I also think it's that you're not so fighting against, you're not constantly clenched and fighting against what's happening to you.
Mm-hmm. That fight happens because of the ego, right? Because it doesn't match what our ego thinks is the right thing, that's why we fight, right? Mm-hmm. We have certain expectations about everything, and then the ego says, doesn't match my sense of rightness, my sense of being right. Let's fight. But that's going to create that chatter. That's exactly what we're trying to avoid eventually. Okay, so you can think of these, you know, as three kind of stages, roughly. So, in the Sutra 2, it says, by doing this Kriya Yoga, you diminish the kleshas. And it doesn't define what that diminish means. Okay, somewhat diminish. Maybe they become a little soft, you know, subtle. And then through these, this dhyana means into deep state of meditation, you eliminate the vrittis, which are the active elements in your mind, active elements, okay? And then the previous sutra said the final goal, right? That to get rid of even the most deepest, the most subtlest of kleshas, you have to do the pratiprasava, which is the ultimate state of yoga, kaivalya, okay? Which is go back to the source. That means you merge everything back into the state of balance. The three gunas are balanced, sattva, rajas, and tamas. Okay, so that's these three states of being, so to say, of three stages of cleansing ourselves The whole idea is to cleanse and purify the mind, right, of all these negative stuff. So again, I have just summarized this. Kleshas are eliminated in three stages. Kriya Yoga eliminates the gross, active kleshas. Deep meditation reduces strength of vrittis and then prevents activation of deep-rooted samskaras. And then Pratiprasava, or dissolution into pure nature, through discriminating wisdom, dissolves the mind into Mula Prakriti, unmanifest, balanced Prakriti. That's the whole goal of this exercise. Okay? Is it too deep, too heavy? Is it okay?
It's fine. It's going to take time to understand. And
I know. State of?
Coma, like where nothing happens. Everything.
State of what did you say?
Coma.
Coma.
Coma. Like a coma?
Coma. Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Like when you're
unconscious?
Yeah.
What's the state of coma like? I have no idea.
You know, when a person is totally unconscious, but their heart's still beating.
Right.
Yeah.
The medical coma.
Medical.
I know, I understand that, but what happens in the mind at that time? I don't know.
Because it says it dissolves the mind into Mula Prakriti, where, you know.
It's tranquil, basically. Very tranquil. It's still active. You're still going to function. See, in a state of coma, you're not functioning anything. But in this state, you're functioning perfectly as a normal human being. You're still going to work. You're still raising your children. You're still having your family, everything. Functioning perfectly, but from that state of perfect balance. At that time, your ego doesn't say, oh, I don't like this. Everything is peace and quiet. Okay?
Well, just to kind of be devil's advocate, I guess, there's a purpose for some emotions that, say, for example, someone is attacking you physically.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you respond with anger.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a normal.
That's a normal behavior. But normal then eventually, behavior. You know, soon you will settle down.
Right.
And then recognize that this anger was a result of this, and then you calm down. That's it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sure. Yeah.
So it's not really discounting all of your emotions.
No, it's not discounting all the emotions, right? You know. So.
Because there are
right.
times when you are going to feel things.
I mean, one example, you know, in our ancient culture, you know, there is this. The guy called Dhruva. Anybody heard the name Dhruva?
Yeah.
Right? And the story goes that he was the stepchild of some, you know, his parents. And he, when he was a 5-6-year-old kid, he wanted to sit on the lap of his father. Okay? So when he went close to his father, his stepmother pulled him away and put her own son in his lap because she wanted him, her son, who's the real son, not the stepson, on the lap. So this guy, you know, this kid who gets angry, and he asks his own mother, what should I do? I want to sit in my father's lap. So she said, you have to become a bhakta, you know, a devout person and become a devotee of Vishnu, and then, then you'll gain, you know, supreme, whatever, you know, knowledge and all that. So, and at that very young age, out of anger, he starts devoting his life to Vishnu and eventually becomes completely enlightened. So, yeah, the example is, you know, anger did encourage him to take up devotion at the utmost level.
Right.
And then he became fully enlightened. Okay, and then, in fact, one of the stars is named after him now because he's so stable.
So I guess what you're saying is that the negative emotions are not going to consume you.
No.
You will
consume them. You will consume them eventually.
Right. You'll experience them, but then you let them go and
yes.
see another purpose.
Right.
Okay.
They might serve a purpose, but then don't hang on
right.
to them.
Right.
Don't let them go into your subconscious level. That's the whole point.
Right. Or the attachment. Level.
Yes. So they don't become raga or dvesha.
Right.
That's the idea.
So it's not just for negative emotions, for any emotion.
Any emotion.
Right.
So once the event happens, basically the idea is not for them to linger on.
Not at all. If they linger on, they become samskaras. Then they are problems. Samskaras and vasanas, that's problem. We don't want to get them deposited in our subconscious level. That's the whole idea. If they deposit, we're in trouble. Then you have to go through the whole process of cleansing again. Okay? Okay. All right. So now we are getting into this concept of reincarnation. From here on, the next couple of sutras are all about the concept of birth, rebirth, karma theory, and all that. Okay. So let's read the Sanskrit first. Klesha mulaha karmashayaha drishta adrishta janma vedaniyaha. Let me do that one more time. Okay? So it is klesha mulaha karmashayaha klishta, I'm sorry, drishta adrishta janma vedaniyaha. Right. All right. So what does that mean now? You know, like I said, we have all these samskaras and vasanas. Does everyone know what I'm talking about? What samskara and vasana? No? No idea.
Things that you grow up with.
So what happens is when you experience anything in life, right? Anything in life that you experience as you were growing up, we experience every day, every minute is an experience, right? It creates an impression in the mind. Every experience creates an impression in the mind. And then we attach these labels of I like that experience or I don't like that experience, right? Every experience, okay? So your mother said something, you know, do it this way, that way is the better thing, you know, that's what we're talking about. And, okay, so you like that maybe, and then you start doing it over and over again, that becomes a habit then, and creates a deep impression in your mind, okay? And then you start acting autonomously, basically without any thinking, you know. Then you start reacting to situations based on those things, right? So these impressions that we create in the mind based on every single experience that we go through, okay, they are called samskaras, okay? Likes and dislikes, basically. I like it, I dislike it, every experience. But then we also attach, I want a repeat of this experience, right? I like it so much, I desire it that it happen again. That desire, kind of sudden, subtle, hidden desire, it's called vasana in Sanskrit. So we have samskaras and vasanas, etc. They're all deep down in our subconscious levels. Okay, now, you know, there's another term called karma. Anybody heard the term karma? Karma is what?
Actions.
Karma is our actions. And every action has a reaction, as they say, right? Every action has a reaction. Like this, every action is going to create an impression in the mind, okay? And that's the samskara part, okay? Now, so this whole bag of samskaras and vasanas, the term they use is called karmashaya. That's Patanjali's term for this whole bag of the impressions that we carry in our mind. Okay, this whole bag full. It's called karmashaya. Ashaya means a storehouse. Ashaya means a storehouse. Okay, collection. Karmashaya means the store of karmas. Karmas is all these impressions that we carry. Good karmas, bad karmas, you know, pleasant karmas, unpleasant karmas, everything that we carry. That's called the karmashaya. So what the sutra says, that this karmashaya, which is the result of what? Klesha mulaha, klesha. All these kleshas that we talked about, that's what causes all these karmas, right? If I like something, I'm going to act in a certain way. If I dislike something, I'm going to act in a certain different way, right? And every action is a karma. And every karma has its own impact, has its own result. So what it says is, these, mula means the root. So root, the root cause of this entire collection of karmashaya is the kleshas. That's what it says. Klesha is the root cause of everything that's happening in the mind. Because we have ego. First of all, we have ignorance, then ego, then likes and dislikes, and then fears of all kinds, ultimately leading to the ultimate fear, which is the fear of death. Five, right? These kleshas cause us to act. Okay, desires cause us to act. Lack of desire causes us to act. And therefore he says that every klesha will result in a samskara, will result in this karmashaya, the storehouse being filled up with new samskaras, with new vasanas, new impressions. Does everyone get that? So these kleshas are causing us to fill that bag, basically. Okay? But then what it says here is, drishta adrishta janma vedaniyaha. Vedaniyaha means experience. Vedaniyaha. That means, whatever goes into our bag of karmas, it has to be experienced. When? Two things. Drishta janma, adrishta janma. Drishta janma is what? Drishta means what is seen. What we are going through now. This very life. This very janma, this very life that we are now going through, we can feel or experience the result of our karmas in this life. That's number one. Or adrishta karma, adrishta janma. Janma or the life that we haven't seen yet. That means a future birth. So, if you do something good today, you might have the benefits tomorrow, or you might have to wait for another whole lifetime. Who knows? Yeah? So that's the meaning of this whole sutra, right? So that, let me summarize it again. We have a karmashaya, which is the collection of all our samskaras and vasanas, all our karmas. Okay, karmashaya. The root cause of that karmashaya is our kleshas, all the sufferings that we have, all these raga, dvesha, likes and dislikes, desires, hidden desires, vasanas. That causes all the karmashaya to be filled up. And whatever is in our karma bag will result in something which will be felt or experienced either in this life or some subsequent life. That's the sutra. All right? Karma theory, very important. So what does it say? Kleshas provoke karma, and karma in turn produce more kleshas. We know that, right? So it's a vicious cycle. Right? Karmas will produce klesha, and kleshas will produce karma. Keeps going. That's why we are in this constant cycle of birth, death, rebirth. Okay? That's the reason for all that. So karmashaya is the storehouse of karma. It stores results of good and bad deeds, samskaras. Kama, krodha, lobha, and moha. Lust, anger, greed, and delusion are the causes of good or bad deeds. Now, in our culture, at least from the Hindu culture that we come from, they list six enemies of human mind, six enemies. Okay? So these six are normally mentioned, kama. So does anybody remember those six? Kama, krodha, lobha, moha.
Maya.
Number 5 and 6, I'm just trying to see if anybody remembers those. Kama, krodha, lobha, moha, mada, matsarya. Mada and matsarya. The four are listed here, but the mada means in the
intoxicated.
Mada. Mada means arrogance. Arrogance. Okay? Mada.
Isn't that ego?
Yeah. Real strong ego. That's called mada. And what's matsarya? Jealousy. So kama is lust. Lust is craving. You know, when you crave something, that's called kama. I have a strong craving for this ice cream, you know. Always food as an example. Okay, that's kama. Krodha, we all know. We all experience that from time to time. Anger, kama, krodha. Lobha, greed. Everyone knows what greed is. Okay. And moha is delusion. That means I don't know what reality is and I keep acting based on my own understanding of reality, which is misguided all the time. That's moha. And mada is arrogance. Atsarya is jealousy. Those two are not listed here. This is from a commentary by Vyasa. You know, these four, he lists them. He says, the ego it makes us do these four things, and then these four things eventually result in all kinds of samskaras, you know, these karmashaya being filled with this negative stuff, okay?
So what about worrying about something? Does that fit under delusion or something? I mean,
that's somewhat part of the delusion, but worrying is a result of all this. We worry why? That's an outcome. Because we worry because something is not going according to our expectation, okay? And that's all caused by the ego, basically. Okay? Alright, so now what it says is laws of karma apply when performed out of ego, ahankara, and the seeds of karma bring fruit either in this life or future lives depending on the intensity of these samskaras. Who decides this? I don't know. You know, in our ancient culture they give names like Prajapati and, you know, things like that. And they claim that these people are sitting up there somewhere and they dole out, dish out what you're going to be in this life and what you're going to be in the future life. Who knows? Okay, this theory of karma is super complex. You know, does anybody understand it? I don't know. I don't. I doubt if anybody does, but who knows?
I guess sometimes I think I've seen it play out, though.
Of course it does. We all know that, right?
Yeah.
It does play out, yes. Yeah. You're right.
It's hard to imagine how it would play out in future lives. But, you know, in my own life, I've seen it play out.
Sure, yeah. We all experience playing out, yep. Some sense. Okay. Okay, so this is number 13 now. Okay, so let's read the sutra first. Sanskrit. Sati mule tad vipakah jati ayuhu bhogah. So this sutra is sati mule tadvipakaha jatyayurbhogaha, which breaks into jati, ayuhu and bhogaha. Three things. Okay. So what it says is sati mule. Mule means root. So being, you know, that we have this whole karmashya, which is the root cause of all this action that we do, right? Sati mule. Therefore, it says tad vipakaha. Vipakaha means paka. Paka means fruition, right? In Hindi, in our language, we call pakna, right? To make something ripe. So when the fruit ripens, that's also called pakna. Fruit pagaya, right? We said. So vipakaha means, you know, when the roots become fruits. Okay, when they grow into into the trees and become fruits. Okay, so the fruition of these karmas, which are subdued in the root cause on the karmashaya, okay, that's the fruition, right? How do they manifest? They manifest in three things: jati, ayuhu, and bhogaha. Jati means loosely species. In our culture, they say you're a human being now. If you do bad karma, you can be anything in future. You can be an ant or an animal or a fish or a fly or whatever. Yeah? Probably you've heard all these things, right? So the species will be determined by what you have in the karma, in the bag of karmas. Okay? Ayuhu. What is ayuhu? Lifespan, basically. Span of life. Right? Ayuhu. So your span of life will be one of the factors that will be determined. So jati, what species? Ayuhu, what span of life? And bhogaha. What's bhogaha? Experience. What kind of experience you will have? Whether you have good experience, bad experience, pleasant or unpleasant. Whether you will get cancer or whatever. So all that will be determined by this karmashaya, which is the root cause of all that's going to happen in future. So, sati mule, sati means being there, mule, the root cause. So, being in the root, sati mule, tad vipaka, the vipaka, or the fruition of these things which are in the root cause of all these things that's happening, is going to be in the form of three manifestations: jati, ayu, and bhoga. Jati is species, ayu is the span of life, and bhoga means what kind of experience you will have. Bhoga. All right? So that is what will be determined by your karma, basically. All right? Very simple statement. It's simple. Who decides it? I don't know. Okay, so what it says is, karmashaya, storehouse of karmas, determines three types of fruits in the next life. Well, I shouldn't say next life. Either this life or next life. It should be both, either one. So that's an error. Jati, type of birth, human, animal, species, or celestial realms. Ayu, a span of life. Bhoga, experience of life. At death, physical body disintegrates. Subtle body carries over to next physical body. Okay, let me explain that term now. What is subtle body? And what
your soul?
Yep, go on.
Spirit? Your soul and spirit, I guess.
So remember we said we have 23 elements?
Right.
23 elements, right? So there is three kinds of bodies, they say. One is called in Sanskrit, sthula, sukshma, and third body is karana sharira. So sthula sharira, sukshma sharira, karana sharira. Sthula is the gross body. Gross body is this physical body. Gross, sthula, which comprises of these five elements that we said: earth, water, fire, air, and ether. It comprises of the five sense organs, my eyes, ears, nose, and all that. It comprises my five organs of action, movement, etc. All those 15, and the mind, which is also inactive, they are considered to be gross. Okay? What is subtle? Everything else is subtle. The five sense perceptions, your ego, your intellect, and all that is called subtle. Okay, so when we say what goes into the next life, okay, so what goes into the next life? The soul is entangled. Right now, soul is not free, right? If the soul were free, no rebirth. Soul is not free right now. Soul is entangled with what?
The subtle body.
My subtle body. Subtle body is all the samskaras, all the vasanas, all the impressions that I have, all the storehouse of memories, plus my all the sense perception and all, that's all the subtle body. So this soul, which is attached to this subtle body, It's now one, basically. It's not separated. It's not free. That subtle body, at the time of physical death, the physical body disappears. The elements merge into the five elements, okay? But this soul, which is entangled with the subtle body, goes and starts living in a different human body now, different physical body.
The subtle things are sukshma?
Sukshma, yeah. Subtle means the sukshma part.
And what was the karana?
Karana is the mool prakriti. Mula prakriti is the balanced state, which is the root cause of all this creation. That's called the karana sharira.
So we all have it in us.
We all have it in us, yes. Yes.
But it's just lost because of other.
Okay. So that's the subtle body that we talked about. So at the time of death, physical body disappears. That's fine. Take a walk. and the subtle body goes and establishes itself in a new physical body. That's the concept of reincarnation according to our yoga philosophy, Hindu philosophy, you can call it. Then the karmas that do not bring fruit in the next life can be destroyed. Merged with the dominant karma, or remain dormant to be activated in even future birth. Who knows? Okay. With attainment of knowledge, ignorance and other kleshas are destroyed. So that's the purpose of yoga, is to eventually gain that true knowledge, true essence of understanding, which will destroy all the ignorance, all avidya, completely. And then karmashaya is a collection of burnt seeds which are unable to bring fruit. And the prarabdha karma, or the karma allocated birth, continues until physical death. So even when we are enlightened, even when we attain self-realization, because of what we have been dished out at the very beginning of our life, we have to continue with that. It's called prarabdha karma. Okay? That's what we are saying. Karma is destroyed by self-realization, enlightenment. Okay? So, to get back to that question, there are three types of karmas, right? Three types of karmas. Anybody remember the three names? We've mentioned that. Three types of karmas, remember, Laura? The Sanskrit words are Sanchita Karma, Prarabdha Karma, Agami Karma. Okay. So, Sanchita Karma is like a total bank balance, right? It's the collection of all the karmas that we have accumulated over millennia, millions of lifetimes, who knows, from time immemorial, right? We've been collecting these karmas from every life and it goes into our bag. Right? Out of that whole bag of karmas, we are doled out a subset of that karma for this life. So when we are born, like I said, who does it? Who knows who does it? Somebody out there does it. Alright? So we are dished out a certain subset of that Sanchit karma, which we have to now experience in this life. And it might say, at the age of 40 you will have cancer, at the age of 50 you will be fully functional again. Or you will have this or that, or you'll be born in this family, or you'll have such and such height, your skin color will be so and so. Everything is all determined by that karma. That's called prarabdha karma. What this statement says, even though we may be enlightened, when we are enlightened, the sanchit karma goes away. That collection of karmas destroyed. Okay? But because we were given this prarabdha karma at the beginning of this life, we cannot destroy that. It has to go through. We have to go through this life, no matter what.
Third type is the agami karma,
which is what we create in this life now, by our actions now. Good actions will create good karma, bad actions will create bad karma, but it becomes agami. Agami means future.
Future life.
Okay, again to be fructified either in this life or in a future life. All right? And then, oh, that's it, prarabdha karma. All right? That's the fruit of karma. Okay. I'm going to stop here. My voice is getting tired. All right. Any questions, finally? Anything that comes up in the mind? Like I said, these are very complex topics. We'll do our best.
When does he talk about defining the self? I guess I wonder, a question I've had studying all this, does each of us have a different true nature, or is it sort of a kind of a collective?
Well, you know, again, you know, this is where the whole philosophy of Sankhya differs from other philosophies. What Sankhya says that each individual Purusha is independent.
Okay.
Every one of us.
You have to find out who you're.
For your own self, you'll find out your own true nature.
Okay.
Your own consciousness, pure consciousness. They may be identical, but they're independent.
Okay.
And every individual has their own Purusha,
okay,
which has to be freed, which has to be liberated individually.
Okay.
I liberate my Purusha, I become free. That doesn't mean everyone else is liberated.
Right. But they would not. They could be the same, but they might not be the same.
It's not the same. They are independent.
Okay.
That's how they are defined.
Okay.
They are independent.
Mm-hmm.
Prakriti is common for everyone.
Okay.
Purusha is independent of every individual. That's a very unique feature of Sankhya philosophy.
Okay.
Totally different from Vedanta. Mm-hmm. That's why the people who believe in Vedanta, they hate Sankhya people.
Oh.
They hate Sankhya people, and vice versa. Yes, yeah. Well, Vedanta has multiple formats. There's a Dvaita form, there's Advaita form, there is something called Vishishta Dvaita. Okay, more qualified Advaita, the Vishishta Dvaita. You know, three philosophers, Shankaracharya was one, Ramanujacharya was one, Madhvacharya was. Madhvacharya was one, so they all had their own lineage of different concepts of Vedanta. So, but these days a lot of people tend to focus on Advaita Vedanta, which is the non-dual Vedanta, which is most commonly learned these days. A lot of people are learning that, just because there are teachers who have kind of grasped that idea. And they are the people who are dead against Sankhya philosophy, because Sankhya says, oh, there are multitudes of Purushas. Yeah. Okay. So that's our ongoing saga of this whole creation. And now we get into Sankhya philosophy after this sutra.
Is it every Saturday?
No, it's...
Just one.
Every Saturday, I'll be dead by now.
So second Saturday every month?
Or? No, it's all third Saturday.
Third Saturday every month.
Today is the third Saturday. Every month, once a month, third Saturday we do this discussion. And, I try to read up, but again I get confused sometimes and I read multiple commentaries and each one seems to have a different approach, so I get confused many times, but... Then I say, okay, sit back, think about what my thoughts are. That's what I present here, right? I said, it's not always, it may not be exactly what Patanjali had in mind, but who knows his mind? I don't know.
Mm-hmm. So this is the chapter, or the next chapter, it talks about the whole process of meditation. The first chapter.
Well, first chapter talks about the concept of meditation. The second and third chapter go into the process of meditation. Well, the first chapter also talks a lot about the deep process of meditation. But then third chapter goes into the effects or the results of deep meditation, which is vibhuti, supernormal powers.
Okay.
So you can attain powers that are beyond human understanding. That's in the third chapter. Okay. Fourth chapter goes back into Sankhya philosophy a little more and then goes into the whole understanding of Kaivalya, which is the final state of being when we are self-realized. Okay. All right. Is that okay for everyone? Let's close the session. Sit down. Let's close the eyes. Sit up nice and comfortably tall. Closing. Now we'll recite Om once now. So take a deep inhalation. The same invocation one more time. You can read up on the screen or just close the eyes and listen in. Yogena chittasya padena vacham malam sharirasya cha vaidyakena yopakarottam pravaram muninam patanjalim pranjaliranatosmi. Patanjalim pranjaliranatosmi. Om asato ma sadgamaya tamaso ma jyotirgamaya mrityorma amritam gamaya. Om shanti shanti shanti. Please lead me from unreal to the real, darkness to light, and from the fear of death to the knowledge of immortality. Peace, peace, peace. Thank you. Thank you very much. Have a wonderful rest of the evening.